Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday. Our guest this hour says, everybody says you can't change the world, but that's exactly what all of us want to do. So that became the focus, his focus, changing the world. And he wanted to change the world to get a major corporation to hire a significant number of people with all kinds of disabilities. Randy Lewis said, at first I just said it to myself, then I started saying it to other people. You can change the world. Once again, some scoffed, but others caught the fire. Randy has written very movingly about this whole movement, and particularly poignantly about his son, Austin, who is in his 20s now. I think he just had a birthday yesterday and was suffering from autism. And the family had to make all kinds of arrangements to get him educated and to make sure that he was safe and to give him a life. Randy has written about all of this, his work at Walgreens, where he was former senior vice president of Walgreens, a Fortune 50 executive, and also an advocate for people with disabilities. He was senior vice president of supply chain and logistics and started this modest plan to make a difference that turned into a company-wide effort to hire people with many different kinds of disabilities. And they now represent a big percentage of the workforce in distribution centers around the country. And Randy is sharing his success with other companies as well. His book is No Greatness Without Goodness, How a Father's Love Changed a Company and Sparked a Movement. And as I said, Austin is his son. He was born in 1988, and he's in the workforce now. Randy calls him his catalyst, inspiration, and goad. Our phone number for you to join this conversation this hour is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter at @KDunnShow. Hello, Randy. Thanks so much for being with us.
Well, it's great to be here.
So you wanted to change the world, huh? And so you did.
Well, we wanted to change the workplace one part at a time, and it happened to work that way. That was always the dream, and it turned out better than we'd ever dreamed.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Austin for a while. You call him your catalyst, your inspiration, and your goad, in addition to inspiring the business world to do what you've done. I think this book is very important for all of us to understand people with autism, and probably particularly for families who are raising autistic children. This was a rough road for you and your family, wasn't it? Austin was not an easy child to bring up.
Oh, certainly not. He was different from the get-go. He was the only child that came out of the womb and just kind of looked around and took it all in. Our other two daughters came out screaming,
mm-hmm.
"World, here I am!" And we thought he was unique because he was a boy. He was a little late speaking. Matter of fact, he didn't speak at all until about 10. But at age 3, we knew he was delayed, but we thought he was a the boys are like that, and he had his quirks. He was the only one who put himself to bed, but he liked to be around men and more to women. So when we finally got him tested, only at the goading of grandparents, it was like getting kicked in the stomach. So those dreams of those Cub Scout meetings and those campfires and those baseball games,
mm-hmm.
all went away in an instant.
Mm-hmm. He required so much attention. When I read about his timeouts and what you had to do to keep him from just really wandering off and winding up who knows where, he required so, like, constant attention. I don't know how you did it with two other children.
Well, I would find myself thinking about Austin about every 5 seconds.
Uh-huh.
It just becomes a clock is ticking, keeps rolling around. Where's Austin? Where can he be?
Mm-hmm.
And we learned he was clever because he could get through. We had locks on the inside of the house to keep him in, but he tended to find his way out. One time he got out, we'd just come from church, and it was late. It was spring, and the lake was pond we had down the street was still frozen. A neighbor called and says, Austin is out on the middle of the pond.
Oh, my gosh.
And before I could say anything else, she screamed and says, he went through. I yelled at my daughter. She was probably about 10 at the time. My oldest daughter called 911. I jumped in the car, ran down the street, and Austin had gotten out. He had to crawl 50 feet to get out. I didn't have no idea how he got out of the ice.
Oh, my goodness.
And all he could say was, Austin, die. Austin, die.
Oh, my. What a story.
I mean, we've had a couple of calls like that don't know why.
Yeah. And we'll hear the story of how he got there in the Walgreens story, but please tell us. I think yesterday was his birthday, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. And
26
he's
yesterday.
26, and he's working now.
He's working now. He's working at a Walgreens store, and he's interviewed for a Meijer distribution center there in Wisconsin.
Oh, really?
It's interesting that Meijer was, you never know how these things would work out, but Meijer was one of the companies that came to see the Walgreens model and launched their own initiative.
Oh, isn't it? Yeah. You never know.
You never know.
You never know.
What good begets good.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing, and I think it's so true, that we may have had certain kinds of movements, African-American movement, Hispanic. We've had a lot of civil rights movements, gay marriage, et cetera. But I think it's absolutely true that we still don't see people with disabilities. And you have these statistics. I don't know if it's still true, but you were speaking to a group in Las Vegas. Nearly 70% of individuals with disabilities and 95% of people with severe cognitive disabilities will never hold down a job. Goodness gracious.
That's the honest truth. And the thing is, when it comes to people with disabilities, most of us, and I will say 99.999, believe that given a person an opportunity for a job is an act of charity, that they really can't do the work.
Mm-hmm.
It's great if you can afford it and do it and you're being a good person, but most of us really believe that they can't do the job, and we set out to disprove that, because I'd seen that in Austin. He disproved a lot of things that I had thought. And he drives. Who would have ever thought that?
I love the story of his being your chauffeur. He doesn't talk very much, but tell us that story, because it's such a good one, isn't it?
Well, he's a wonderful chauffeur. He'll get up at 5:30 in the morning, whatever I ask him to do, or he'll pick me up, whatever the weather. And I pay him $20, which is quite a bargain. So don't tell him that.
Okay.
But I provide the car, so I guess it's not that great of a bargain. He's a great bargain for him. But anyway, every instance is the same. He will get up that early and get me. We'll drive through the traffic. He'll complain about the traffic, which I think is completely normal. And we'll get to O'Hare, and he'll pull me up to the gate, pull me up to the curb, and I'll say the same thing every time. Austin, you did a great job of driving me here. You got up early. You got through the traffic. Did a great job, and I really appreciate it. And I love you. And every time he will say, $20. So does money make a difference?
I guess it does. And there was a time, maybe this ties into the fact that we don't realize what people with disabilities, what their capabilities are. I think that you were told many times that Austin would never drive. He was chauffeuring you. He chauffeurs you, you know?
Exactly. Well, I remember that they didn't have anything to really tell us how things would turn out. Because you ask, will things get better?
Mm-hmm.
And then the doctor said, well, things might get worse.
Right.
So everything has been a surprise. He turned out to be a good skier.
Hmm.
Found out that was a perfect sport for him because there were no rules and no talking.
No talking. Important
no talking.
Thing.
He didn't have to, he had to get in the conversation because those aren't his skills. But you just point them downhill and go.
Yeah. So at what point did you decide, you're in a pretty big management position with Walgreens, at what point did you have this vision that you were going to change the workforce at distribution centers and design something that really probably hadn't been done before, where it was going to be staffed with people with disabilities, at least a good percentage of the distribution center, working alongside, same pay, same hours, asking for the same work from people with disabilities and people who did not have disabilities. When did that become a vision for you, Randy?
Well, we had started out small. We had started with school systems. We said, let's go out and talk to these school systems because there's people coming out of the school system. That was probably late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see if let's match up their talents with our needs. And that worked out okay, but some school systems were more responsive than others. Sometimes the folks they would send to us, well, I would think, gee whiz, these aren't very many challenged young people. These are very talented. We're not really testing ourselves here. But it was okay, but it was not scalable. It wasn't anything that would ring a bell. And then we tried later with contracting some work out, but it wasn't mission critical work. It was cleaning totes on the side where a company brings in people with disabilities and they have their own management.
Oh.
They were kind of apart from us, and that was, we could have gotten awards if we had done that, kept doing that, but they really weren't us. And I think the thing that really started formulating the idea, one of our managers in our Pennsylvania distribution center hired a young man with Asperger's,
mm-hmm.
who drove, his name's Chuck, and he was very successful. And a lot of people say, well, how would people like working around a person with a disability? Well, Chuck worked with two ladies up there, and I asked him that one time, how is it working up here with Chuck? Does anybody have a problem? And they said, well, if they have a problem, they're going to have to come through us. So it kind of gave me an indication, and a father stopped me when I was going through there and said, and his son worked there, and he had a disability. He said, if you ever have to lay people off, lay me off so that my son can stay here. So that coming with that understanding, and then the opportunity came along in about 10 years ago, and we were planning a new center. We had built just four centers right in a row, made them very automated. It gave us a lot of confidence that we could even take the automation to a higher degree. And so we set out to build a center that would be the most cost-effective center in the history of our company, most automated. And, oh, by the way, we could tweak the automation without adding any expense to enable a whole group of people that had never worked before.
Hmm.
And we were going to aim high. One out of three people would be a person with a disability. That'd be 200 in a building of 600.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought if we could make this work. And, oh, by the way, we couldn't find an example anywhere in the world where anybody had built a mission-critical building, a commercial
really?
Building.
Huh.
Nobody had ever done that before, and they hired those many numbers that, gee whiz, if this works, maybe we can change not only our workplace, but make this an example for the world.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of dream big, but, oh, by the way, this has got to be successful.
Right.
And it exceeded that. Instead of being 30% of the workforce, it's 40%. And the next building was 50%. And then we realized it wasn't about the automation, that we could put it in places that were not automated. And it got rolled out in all 20 centers where I think today over 10% of the workforce across the board, over 1,200 people with disabilities.
Mm. And that's true in stores now too, isn't it?
Stores has picked this up, and they set a goal probably about 4 years ago to eventually have 10% of the all new hires to be a person with a disability. And that's been rolling out across the various states. Each state's different. Each store is different. Each district's different. Wisconsin's one of those states where it's been very successful.
Mm-hmm.
Got a lot of support.
And we are talking same pay, same hours, same set of expectations for people who have disabilities who are working, just like people who are able-bodied people.
Exactly. You know, when there's same performance, there's same respect. That's what it requires. I mean,
mm-hmm.
we have got the wonderful thing we learned to see people as people that we're more alike, no matter what our differences are. We're more alike than we're different. In the work environment, that means performance really needs to be the same. because everybody pulls their weight, and that's what the really difference has been. When everybody sees those other people with challenges and they can perform, we realize that there's lots of good things about ourselves, and we're reminded of that better person in each of us.
Hmm. No greatness without goodness. That's the name of Randy's book. Randy Lewis is our guest. It's really a fascinating story, an extremely inspirational book, not only about his work with Walgreens, changing the workforce, really bringing in people with disabilities, and the story of his son, which I'm sure inspired all of this, his son, Austin, who has autism and is working now and not saying very much, but he is working now and driving. And it's an inspirational story on all fronts. Randy is now retired Walgreens senior vice president. Our phone number, and we're getting a lot of calls now. We'll go to phone calls and email messages. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter. You can find us at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go first to a Facebook comment. It's a good one from Trisha. This topic couldn't have come up at a better time. She read an interview online and ordered your book yesterday. My 19-year-old brother, my husband and I adopted, had a developmental delay. In the interview I read, you mentioned an individual who broke a computer while working. Instead of firing him immediately per company policy, Walgreens was able to take the time to understand his disability and accommodate for it. My question is, how did you convince human resources to think outside the box in regards to policies already in place and help them to be okay working in the gray? Were they worried about legal liability of making exceptions? If so, how was that dealt with?
That's a very good question, and a very insightful question, because everybody loves consistency. And the fear is if we make exceptions, that's going to be viewed as being unfair. Where we had to get to is, what are we trying to accomplish with all these policies? And I think once you start thinking about that, what we're trying to achieve is achieve great performance, great quality, and a great work environment.
Mm-hmm.
And once you start down that road, you get to questions about how can we accommodate, what is the policy getting in the way of certain things, and it kind of opens up the door. Now, the added advantage is it makes management be much more thoughtful about people and engage people much more than we had ever seen before. And quite frankly, I'll even ask you, Kathleen, would you rather work in a place where everything is an ironclad rule that you understand, and, however, there's no exceptions? Or would you rather work in a place where we say, this is what we want to achieve, here are the general guidelines, but we're going to manage by principles and judgment, and we'll make some mistakes, but we're going to use principles instead of ironclad rules. Which would you prefer?
Oh, Randy, it would be number two.
<That's> what, yep. Most people like that.
Right.
And I don't know why we steer. And so once we got to there, then it really opened the doors to really be creative and engage the creativity of everybody.
Yeah. Let's go to Brad in Whiting, Wisconsin. Hi, Brad.
Hello.
Yes, hi, Brad.
Oh, hi. Most of the current discussion about employment for people with disabilities focuses around low-level jobs, oftentimes manual, with low pay and few responsibilities. But for folks like myself that are highly educated, highly trained, have held management positions in the past, employers won't touch us with a 10-foot pole if we have a chronic illness, which most people with disabilities do. Their attitude is, oh, if you're sick, you shouldn't be working. But, you know, employers could hire folks like myself if they were creative, flexible, and had the will to do things differently, particularly with flexibility around work schedule. If you're sick, that's a biggie. But employers, you know, they want you to be on the job at a work position, workstation from such hour to such hour, and they they just can't think outside the box.
Brad,
they don't want to.
Do you mind talking a little bit more about what you suffer from and how it's been problematic for finding employment?
I'd rather not get into that.
All right.
But as soon as an employer sees that you have a sickness and have had gaps in your employment history,
uh-huh.
they're just really gun-shy about that. And they're worried about their health insurance premiums going through the roof for everybody in their company. You know, if you're racking up a lot of medical bills or taking time off work, that's another fear they have, too,
uh-huh.
which would shift the workload to their other coworkers.
Randy.
Well, no, I think you're exactly right. A lot of it's lack of consciousness and fear on the part of the employer. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. Gaps in a resume signal these hiring systems that there's an issue there. And employers just don't want to take a chance. One thing that we said that we had to do is we wanted to be fair to shareholders and fair to fellow employees. So we wanted to figure out a way around it. Somebody couldn't work the overtime or somebody couldn't, be there all the time, how would we be fair on compensation to everybody to accommodate that?
Mm-hmm.
So we still say that we're paying for performance. But I think there's a whole workforce out there, like you say, that's
mm-hmm.
skilled, that doesn't have opportunities because employers shy away from them. We had a woman that used a walker, and she was working in an office work and as a temp, and she brought in her walker, and the fellow said, "Why are you using a walker?" And she said, "Well, I need it occasionally." He said, "Well, won't you come back when you don't use it?"
Oh, my goodness.
So, and he's exactly right. There's a bias out there. There's a fear. There's an unknown. And hopefully, examples, why we get more people in the workforce. A lot of these, like I say, some of these are manual labor, but not our jobs weren't. But there are a lot of entry-level jobs because there's no opportunities to get the experience
mm-hmm.
employers are looking for. So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Mm-hmm. Tell us the story of, I can't remember her name, the young woman who I believe had cerebral palsy who became a manager for you and really played a very important role in getting the whole thing rolling.
Oh, yes, that's Angie.
Angie
went to Clemson, made all A's, went to graduate school, made all A's, highly educated, and sent out over 200 resumes. I think she had like 30 interviews and not a single job offer just because she said when she would walk in the door, they would have that, oh, my gosh, look on their face
mm-hmm.
that they wouldn't believe. And so she had not a single job offer. So she picked up a job at the local rehabilitation office working with people with disabilities as clients. And she heard about us, and she left that job. And she is probably one of our best HR people that we have in the entire company.
Oh, my goodness.
And we're fortunate to have her.
Yeah.
She just got a promotion a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, we've seen talent come out of all places, all different kinds of folks.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for calling, Brad. And let's go next to Dawn in Waterloo. Hi, Dawn.
Hi.
Hi, Dawn.
Hi. I have a son with a disability, and we're currently working through DVR. But it also seems that unless you – my son has a job right now. He works at McDonald's. It's not a lot of hours, but it's something for him to do. And we are currently looking for other employment, but going through DVR, we're having troubles with them – understanding that he is capable of other work or meaningful work. You know, right now he only works weekends, so he doesn't spend a lot of time with the family, and that is a problem for him. And he's been through several interviews with companies, and because he can't get through an interview, they won't hire him with his disability.
That's an interesting point you bring up, Donna. I mean, what we discovered, we call those the invisible walls we have around the place. We employers have all these processes to what we believe to get us the best workforce. But a lot of times they tend to screen out a lot of people whose lack the ability to get through those little things like an interview. For example, my son would be terrible at an interview and not be able to get through that process, but he's great at doing the work and picking orders and doing certain things. But we don't think about that as employers, and that's why I think we have to keep changing. We have to open up other avenues. And the key thing is, you know, DVR, vocational rehabilitation in all the states, they work hard at placements, but we've got to create more opportunities on the employer side. And so most of my work, even in retirement, is helping other employers to see that this is a workforce that needs to be engaged. If we can create the demand, then the supply will take care of itself.
Thank you so much for the call. You write about this experience of speaking in Las Vegas, telling your story to 5,000 Walgreens store managers. I saw the video on this, and it's very moving. Somebody like you had never spoken at the National Store Manager meeting before, a distribution guy. And you talk about the inspirational story, and then at one point ask people in the audience to stand up if there's anybody dear to their heart who they know who has a disability. And that must have been such a moment, Randy. 1,000 people stood up, I imagine. So it's not as though we don't know people or it hasn't touched our lives, but it just hasn't translated into the workforce, which in a way seems way behind the times, doesn't it?
Well, maybe this is an idea whose time has come. That's what we hoped it would be. And standing in that room in Vegas, and it's all in around, and you're there, and people all around you, 5,000, there's probably 7,000 people in there, 5,000 of those are managers, and you're telling them this story, and you say that we're going to do this, and then we're going to open up our doors to the world. I think that's what captured everybody's imagination, because everybody was longing for this to work. And then at the end, to ask people to stand up, and it was quietly people would stand up here and there, and then finally there were probably about 1,000 standing. That was a holy moment when they realized this wasn't a story about the distribution centers. That was our story, our of all of us. And we tend to overlook that in the workplace, in this hustle bustle.
Right.
I was reading something from the Talmud I heard the other day. We don't see the world as it is. We see the world as we are. And in this hustle bustle, we just don't see all those things out there. And we have to be reminded sometimes that there's an opportunity and an ability to make a difference.
Yeah. Let's go to Lynn in Eau Claire. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Kathleen, and boy, are you a hero, your guest. I'm sorry. I'm a little overwhelmed. I have a son born about 33 years ago, and if he was diagnosed at that time, I mean, when I gave birth to him, and I knew right away that this child is different. He would have been labeled with Asperger's, and he always colored outside the box. And he was excused from his education at 14 because he couldn't stay in the lines. You know, he wasn't conforming. And then at 17, he suffered a traumatic brain injury, and now there's not even any lines he stays in anymore because he's a terminal 17-year-old. There's no poor judgment, everything that goes along with the TBI, impulsivity, and on and on and on. And then after that, because of a congenital spine defect, he's fused from T4 to L4. Ironically, I just got off the phone about a half hour ago with Tammy Baldwin's office, still looking for help for my son. And there's something out there for him. There is some place where he'll be able to shine. And right now it's in his family. I mean, we're close. He has a daughter. He did not have a successful marriage. Living with someone with a traumatic brain injury is at least impossible, but it's what we do. And it's a journey. And as an adult, I ended up disabled due to some physical issues. I had a young man who, he stepped in and saved my life. His name is Jeff Mayers. He owns a business up here. He created a job for me because he recognized my talent. He recognized what I had beside my, beside having a disability. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, God bless men like your guest. And Jeff is 30, you know, and he's a wonderful human being. Mm-hmm. And someday someone will step forward with something for my son. We don't give up help. We don't turn our backs. We're all in it together.
Randy.
No, exactly. Exactly. It's those heroes that happen out there one at a time that see something and do something about it and give us all hope. And please know, it's parents like you in the situations that you're in. I would get letters from all over the country, and we posted those up on the bulletin board. So all the team members, and we were building this, and we had people in six different countries working on this project. And they all saw those letters from parents like you, who tell the story of their child and what it means to them. And that was the fire that was the engine that drove all of this. We need to hear those stories. We need to be reminded that this is important work. And, oh, by the way, meaning in the workplace is a lot more powerful motivator than money about doing something. And my heart goes out to you. We play in the same orchestra. We're just playing different instruments.
Yeah. Thank you, Lynn, very much for your call. You're right. Meaning is so important. And I would imagine that. I mean, I think back, I've been in this business a long time, and I think back being a woman entering this field many, many years ago when there weren't very many of us. There's something about being given a chance. And I'm sure that you have found that true with many of the people you hired who had been ignored. If somebody would just give you a chance. I'm a worker. The people who are hired, I haven't had a chance. Let me show you. I'm a worker. There's something about being able to shine and to prove yourself when you haven't been given a chance to do that. Don't you think, Randy?
Oh, most certainly. That's a story that's been told over and over.
I'm sure.
We've been rewarded in such ways, and I think the for us, the impact we saw on people without disabilities
mm-hmm.
was incredible. They brought out, when I say they, it's because it's us, it's our brothers and sisters, they brought out the best in all of us. You know, since I've gotten closer to this, now I know autism because that's something I live with, but mm-hmm. all disabilities are have a range, have a spectrum, have challenges, and so I don't pretend. I've learned more three-letter initials since we've gotten into this thing.
Hmm.
But what I found generally true is when I see a person with this disability, I get reflected back that better person in me.
Mm-hmm.
It's not pity. I don't see that. I don't see it with pity. But I'm reminded of the all the wonderful things we've been given and what we're capable of. That brings out a better person. Can I just tell you a quick story?
Of course you can.
As an example of this. We go to a place on the beach and on the lake that has every teenager that can get beer and football shows up there, and it's wild at times. And sometimes language is not what you want to be around, and mm-hmm. sometimes behavior is not around. And so it's easy to get jaded about that. So one day my wife and I are sitting out there and said, well, gee whiz, what's the day going to hold? And the music's blaring and everything. And I look over at the corner of my eye, and I see a young man rolling in the waves there. And I said, oh, my goodness, here's somebody who's already had too much to drink, and it's only 10 o'clock in the morning. And I look closer, and there's a wheelchair there, and there's two men, older men, rolling him around. And obviously it's one of their sons.
Mm.
And they put him in his wheelchair, and I turned to my wife, and I said, today is going to be a good day on the beach. Because he's going to remind everybody
right.
of that better person that they are.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was.
We're talking this hour with Randy Lewis. Randy is the author of No Greatness Without Goodness, How a Father's Love Changed a Company and Sparked a Movement. The movement is what happened at Walgreens. It was started by Randy Lewis. He's retired now, but he's former senior vice president, and he led the logistics division at Walgreens for a number of years as the chain was growing so large. And he introduced a model to distribution centers that resulted in a large percentage of its workforce being staffed by people with disabilities. So, and the book is also about his son, Austin. Welcoming phone calls. A couple lines are open. They've been crowded. If you'd like to join us, our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Randy Lewis is with us now. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Barry is next in Madison. Hi, Barry. Hi, Barry.
Thanks for Thanks for taking my call. I want to describe a situation and I guess get Randy's reaction or recommendations. Not too long ago, met a woman up in the middle part of the state who adopted two children, one with autism, one with a fetal alcohol syndrome. They're both in public school and having a very difficult time. The program primarily is geared, you know, at behavior control and very traditional kinds of academics. And this woman has four, five, six friends or acquaintances that she also have kids with autism. And what this woman did was pull their kids out of school, and she's a teacher, and she really got into computer gaming and project-based learning. And these two kids, I mean, the one boy is like has gone through, as a matter of fact, he's been invited to be sort of a poster child for the Khan Academy. This kid has gone through mathematics growth that is just absolutely incredible. He's like almost ready to do calculus. He's only 12 years old, but they can't handle him in public school. So what she and I and two or three other people are trying to put together is a school that would be centered around the interests of the kids, the strength of the kids versus their weaknesses, with an emphasis on gaming and plugging into some resources within the community. So that is that design. What do you think of that sort of approach versus the traditional compliance kind of thing that some of your guests or some of your callers have already alluded to?
Randy.
Well, I think that tailoring education to each the talents of each kid, disability or not, it's a great idea, and I think school systems work on that. So I don't know the specifics of the individual school system, but sure, I'd applaud that effort. The one thing in the autism world, learned a phrase long ago, says once you've seen one person with autism, you've seen one person with autism.
Right.
My son, I hoped after seeing Rayman, I was hoping he would have that talent that Dustin Hoffman did and be able to count cards, but that was not his skill. My son is not a savant and doesn't have that wonderful mathematical ability. But it's great that the child you're talking about does, and it's gotten recognized and it's going to get exploited in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think school systems struggle. And our experience has been it's not because of lack of concern. It's mostly because of either lack of resources, being overwhelmed, or ignorance.
And what about school systems being able to contribute to letting their students with disabilities know about job possibilities? Are we failing in that regard?
Well, I think that's a great opportunity in the future, because I think we've got to change the expectations of the school system that everybody works. I think there's too many, for too long, you've been shunted aside. And, oh, by the way, we're going to get you through and teach you some basic life skills. and you're going to be on welfare.
Mm-hmm.
That the expectation should be employment. In all school systems, most big school systems, they'll have a counselor that specifically helps counsel students on getting into college. So why don't we have the equal resources for helping these kids get a job or get the skills to get a job and work with employers and community college? And that's just a part of the expectation of the system.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly be a lot cheaper in the long run than, and it would be a lot better for mankind so everybody could serve a useful purpose.
Thank you, Barry, for your call. Go change the world. Our number is 800-486-8655, and we have lines open for Randy right now. Marcus in Green Bay. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Marcus.
Thanks for the program, and mm-hmm. It's always good to enlighten the world. But about 8 years ago, I was unable to do my job that I had for 20 years. I was pretty good at it, and I just wasn't able to do it. And I stopped working, lost the house to foreclosure and all that, went to a homeless shelter, and they connected me. I got on disability, and I moved into this apartment complex here. And I always enjoyed working outside and everything, so I started helping one of the local managers, just doing outdoors work. And I didn't know it, but the owners of the building, they own a lot of buildings and everything, and they noticed I was pretty good at it and enjoyed it, and they pulled me into the office. They wanted to hire me, and I spent about, I swear, a half hour going back and forth trying to convince them that I couldn't be an employee. I had days that I couldn't function enough, and they said, they convinced me, work at your own pace. There's no pressures. And finally, I did it. And to this day, I'm so grateful that they did that. Number one, they didn't have to. And it helped me so much. And I just thought it was just so neat because it's not how they normally do things. I know that now. Mm. And I don't know. I just often wondered if maybe they knew someone close to them that or the potential they saw in me or something. But, boy, it just meant so, so much. And so about it.
Thank you, Marcus. Thank you for that wonderful phone call, and thanks to the people who did that for Marcus.
Well, Marcus, I hope Marcus, go tell them to come outside right now. If you're listening to the wind, they can hear me clapping.
Yay! Oh, it's just a great story, isn't it? He was telling them they shouldn't hire him, and yet they still saw in him the essence of who he was. We need people like that. You doubly need somebody when they can't really advocate for themselves.
Most certainly.
Yeah.
We need to make that less the exception and more the rule.
Thank you, Marcus, so much for your call. Lori in Watertown. Hi.
Hi. Yes, thanks for taking my call. I developed epilepsy later in life. I'm 46 years old. I developed epilepsy 3 years ago, and I was working at the time. I'm an engineer, and I would have seizures, and I missed work, and they ended up firing me. And now my concern is when I go on job interviews, in fact, I have a job interview Friday, I don't know what to tell them. Do I tell them that, it's under control with medication, but they're going to ask me why I was let go from my last employer, and it was because of these medical reasons. I missed too much work. It's under control now with medication. I haven't had a seizure since, in the middle of last year. So I don't know what I would tell this new employer. Do I tell them, I was let go because of this medical issue? Do I just, I wouldn't even know what to lie about. I wouldn't even know what to say why I was fired,
Right.
What do I do in that case?
All right, Randy.
Well, I think there's a lot of fear. I mean, I think there's some lots of reasons for people not to disclose a disability because they're afraid of the discrimination against them. People will be afraid, she won't be able to do the job here. However, I think that's changing. And in your case, in your specifics, if you don't say something, they're going to wonder something else. And to face it up, the way you just explained it, I had these seizures. I had to miss a lot of work. That's behind me now. I've got this. I have new medication, and face that straight on.
Right.
As far as society, we need more people who are brave, like you, who would say, I have this disability or I have this condition. No, it's a bad word, disability. I have this condition, I have this challenge. Oh, by the way, everybody's got one. But to face it straight on, we have one of our best workers in our Connecticut facility has like up to 17 seizures a day.
Hmm.
And he was telling me how hard it was to find a job. He'd been looking for a job for a long time. But it doesn't get in the way of his work. He can, when he has a seizure, he happens to wear a hockey helmet because he has so many of them.
Mm-hmm.
But they're over in a while. He comes back up and he gets to work and gets his work done. So most of it's around fear.
Mm-hmm.
But I would encourage you to disclose it, because the employer that accepts that is the kind of employer you want to work at.
That's for sure. Thank you, and best of luck, Lori. I hope
good luck, Lori.
Hope it goes well on Friday. You have met this movement went beyond Walgreens, right? You've been invited to speak to other corporations, to other companies who have been inspired by what you've done.
Yes. I mean, that was when we said we were going to open the doors to the world, we really meant that. So we let other companies come in, and we said we're going to give everything away, and we did. And some have come and adopted their own programs. Lowe's, they probably have 400 or 500 people. They started probably about 4 years ago. Meijer, there in the Midwest, they've decided what we call go big in all the facets of their operation, their stores and distribution centers and their manufacturing plants. Procter & Gamble did an experiment up there, and they opened a new plant in Maine, and now they're going to roll it across all their manufacturing plants in the North Americas, in the Americas. Best Buy, they built their new e-commerce center in Louisville, and 50% of their workforce are people with disabilities.
Oh, my.
If you order something from Best Buy, it's likely that a person with a disability will get it to you.
Uh-huh.
And Marks and Spencer, in the largest grocer over in the U.S., is doing this, came over. The grocer in Sweden is doing this, and a manufacturing company in Brazil. I mean, it's on and on. So
uh-huh.
Hopefully there'll be more. And other companies are helping other companies, so that's all good. We don't have the corner on the market on this. Like I said, this is an idea whose time has come, and we were just happened to be part of it and grateful for that.
Mm-hmm. And the idea came from Austin, really? Was he the inspiration for all of this?
The inspiration was all those parents like me who were laying in bed at night, hoping to live one day longer than their child because they worry about what's going to happen after they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
So it became a very easy thing to do. We were hiring a lot of people and thinking about what if we could have done something and we didn't because we were afraid.
Hmm. So
that was a much greater fear.
What will Austin do after you're gone, Randy?
I hope he has a job. I hope he has a job. He has his two sisters live across the country. I hope he'll have enough money to live independently and with dignity and with health,
mm-hmm.
have friends, and maybe make more than $20 if you drive somebody to the airport.
And maybe at some point to have a conversation that would be more than complaining about the traffic, or is that asking for too much in this life?
Well, I've learned never to say never. Never to say
I'll bet you have. Yeah, I would imagine. Well, thank you so much. The story is so inspirational, and I love all the details about Austin, because so many families are dealing with this. They'll find inspiration, and business people will find inspiration by what you've done with Walgreens. Thank you, Randy, so much for being with us.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Randy Lewis, and the book is No Greatness Without Goodness, How a Father's Love Changed a Company and Sparked a Movement. Randy is now retired, former senior vice president of Walgreens, and he started all of this, an inclusive model in Walgreens distribution centers that resulted in a significant percentage of the workforce being staffed by people with disabilities. And these employees are held exactly to the same standards, the same pay, same work, same everything. And it's been a model for this company, as you heard him list, so many other companies all over the world. So thanks to Marika Saval and KP Whaley for producing this hour and Thanks to KP for producing this show from beautiful downtown Milwaukee. Tomorrow at 1 o'clock, Michael Lewis will join us. He's got a best-selling book, Flash Boys, A Wall Street Revolt and the Storm It Created on Wall Street. And hour two, we're going to be speaking about the life of Studs Terkel. Studs was on this show many times. He loved this audience. Was a great American author, interviewer, historian, actor, broadcaster, recorder of history. His birthday would have been on Friday, so we'll talk about his contributions to letters tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Thanks for listening. Great conversations ahead on the Ideas Network.